Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
No matter what you ride or drive, it's all about taking it outside. So get on your bed, motor scooter, and ride. This is Outdoors with Wheels with Lynn and Donnie. Get on your bed, motor scooter, and ride. For best results, mix thoroughly with dirt. Add adrenaline, then shake really well. And now, Outdoors with Wheels. Here's Lynn and Donnie.
Good morning and welcome to Outdoors with Wheels. I'm Donnie Stewart.
I'm Lynn Beckwith. Outdoors with Wheels is designed to bring you pertinent information and encourage you to get off your sofa and out into the great outdoors.
How truly fortunate we are to live in a nation where we have the freedom and the liberty to take off anytime we feel like it, get in our favorite vehicle or on our favorite dirt toy, and just go off into the countryside and explore.
The zest to roam from coast to coast is inherent in the American spirit. Our first guest this morning has done exactly that. He has created a network of dirt roads and trails that traverse the entire country from boundary to boundary.
Joining us now is Mr. Sam Carrero.
Donnie and I are both avid motorcyclists. I just took it up about a year ago. I think your trail is going to be an endeavor for me, but we're so enthused by what you've done.
It started out as just something that I did. It has turned into something national, worldwide. I get people from all over the world, Europe and Asia and New Zealand and Australia and down in South America, and I have riders from Iceland, and it's just all over the place, man. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's wonderful. Really wonderful. Yeah. You know, I had the pleasure of traveling the Arkansas portion about 6 years ago, which is when I became aware of it. A good friend of mine was traveling from Tennessee over to Oregon, and he swung through my place up in northwest Arkansas. I'm about 25 miles off the Tat to the north.
Okay. I've changed Arkansas up just a little since the time that you have ridden it, but Ozarks are fantastic. It's good riding over there.
It certainly was. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to join him for the whole trip, but after listening to him describe how much fun he'd already had, I took the next day off and did ride the rest of the Arkansas portion.
Well, that's good. The feedback that I get from most of the riders is very positive. Everybody enjoys it. You know, there's a few guys that you can't please no matter what you do, but I can't, you know. But all in all, everybody really enjoys it, and their comments are that it's been an adventure on the motorcycles, and the people that they meet are friendly, and they just had a great time. So I've been pleased with it so far.
Well, it's certainly a wonderful thing, and the very idea that you can cross the country these days on a patchwork of dirt and gravel is, you know, pretty astounding, isn't it?
Well, it's taken a lot of work. Now, it's not dirt and gravel the whole 5,000 miles, but for most part, I'd say 80%, 85%, it's all non-pavement. You know, you're going to have some pavement when you come to places like, well, when you have to cross rivers and interstates and stuff like that, you're going to have a little pavement.
Certainly. Yeah, that's kind of expected. I hear when it gets out west, the trail gets a little more desolate and most of the pavement disappears.
It does get desolate. When you get in places like Utah, it's like 150, 160 miles between gas stops. And you're out there and you can ride for hours and hours and not see a person or a car or anything. And the downside about that is if you're careless and you're riding carelessly and you wreck and you go down and you break an arm or a foot, you're 4 or 5 hours for medical attention. So you have to be careful about what you do.
Right.
And also the heat of the desert. It depends on what time you get out there. You're out in the high desert a lot, and temperatures are pretty good. So you have to be careful with that. Water and food and stuff like that.
Now, people run the Tat winter and summer, am I correct?
That's correct. The wintertime, you would be blocked in wintertime in places like the high passes of Colorado. They're going to be snowed in.
Right.
And you can't get past those. So if you want to do that, you have to get off the trail and find a road around it. But other than that, it's pretty good.
When we talked to the store owner there in Oregon, Arkansas, he was telling me that he saw people coming on the Tat year-round.
Year-round, that's true. And over the years, I have gotten tons of email from people that actually live on the trail and they see all these bikes coming by. And they email me and say, hey, I want to get on your map. So mark me on your map, and they will provide ice water and help. And most of them will allow you to camp in their yard. There's a lot of places out there that the ranchers will open up their shop for maintenance and repairs, and they won't charge anybody anything for that. And that's gotten to be real famous. There's several places along that you can stop and register and sign up. And a lot of the restaurants put welcome up signs, welcome TAT riders and stuff like that, and motels. So it has become an adventure on your motorcycle, to boil it down. That's what it is.
Sam, do you have any idea how many people ride it every year, roughly?
I do. It's kind of hard to say. Like, I would get an order for some maps, and there'd be three or four riders that go in that same bunch. I would say thousands of riders would ride it each year.
When did you actually undertake beginning this thing, Sam?
I started this thing back in the early 1980s. I was living in a small rural town in Mississippi, and I wanted to find a place to ride that didn't involve major highways and expressways and stuff like that. So I bought a bunch of maps, and I started putting things together, connecting roads, and I was riding them. And then the first two or three months, it turned out to be good. And so I got to the Mississippi-Arkansas border, and I had a good little route. I said, well, I'm just going to go in now. I'm going to do Arkansas. So I got Arkansas done, and it turned out to be great. Then I did Oklahoma, and then boom, boom, boom. And first thing you know, well, it wasn't first thing you know. 10 years later, I was out in the Pacific Ocean. You know, it took a long time to do this.
And
I
could only run out of trail at last, huh?
Yeah, and when I got to the ocean, I said, this is it. I'm done. I'm through. But over the years, I've had to do maintenance because some of the routes that I have chosen were really in the outback. The bridges had gotten to be old and dilapidated, and the county that the bridges were in, the county commissioner decided that he's not going to repair the bridge because nobody lived on that road anymore. So they closed the bridge. Then I had to go out there and work around that. And then there were some roads that were closed. Then there was roads that were built, and I had to work around that. I did go through some private land, but I got the permission of the owner to do that. And then there's one particular place in Oklahoma that the ranch changed ownerships, and the new owner said he didn't want the riders through there anymore because I was using his, he had a long driveway about 6 miles long, and he said, I want these people in my driveway. So I went out there and fixed that. There's things like that, you know. Every year I always have to go out and do something, but it's a labor of love, and I love it, and it's just what I do, you know. It keeps me sane.
The paving of the gravel roads is just a constant factor. We see that here in Texas, up in northwest Arkansas, where I've got my place. You know, it's just a reality.
Well, I know it's a reality. You know, they go in and they say, we're going to pave this for prosperity, just to help people out, which it does. You know, people live on these gravel roads, kind of get tired of the dust, but you have to, you know, just have to do what you got to do. For most of it, it's major non-pavement. So, and you get to see all these backcountry places, that mom and pop stores and gas stops and these little small cafes, and the people are so friendly, and you get to taste the local food and all that stuff. It's a great way to see the United States. It really is. Sometimes you think you're in another country when you're out there. You don't know where in the hell you are. You say, am I in Mexico or where am I? You know?
That is right.
Am I in Texas? Where am I? You know? As far as I know, I haven't had any reports of anybody being mistreated or anything like that. There's been a couple of motorcycles stolen from motels at night, but, you know, I can't help that. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, that is an unfortunate part.
That's an unfortunate thing, yeah. And I have a couple of guys. There's a video posted on the Internet, on YouTube, about a guy who's riding in Utah on this perfectly wonderful Jeep road, and I guess he took his mind off of what he was doing, and he ran off the side of the road, and he dropped about 200 feet. It didn't kill him. It didn't hurt him, but it knocked him out for about 5 or 10 minutes, and that's kind of a horror story. He was riding with a friend of his, and his friend was in front of him. His friend stopped and looked around, and he said, where's my buddy? And he waited on him for 10 or 15 minutes, and then he turned around and started back looking for this guy, and he couldn't find him. So he retraced his tracks, and he was looking for the dirt bike's tracks in the dirt. And then he found the spot where the guy had driven off the road, and he looked down there, and sure enough, the rider was down there. Oh, he had a helmet cam. He still had it turned on. And it's a hoot, man. You need to see that.
Oh, my goodness.
Fortunately, he wasn't hurt. He could have got killed. He really could have got killed. But I don't know what happened. He was daydreaming or something, watching something else. He just ran off the road. That's the only report that I've gotten. I've had a couple of encounters with bears. One of them's been in Arkansas, and one of them's been in Colorado. I was leading a group of guys in Arkansas around the little town of Scotland, Arkansas. They had about 10 riders behind me, and we were on a nice little Jeep road doing 35, 40 miles an hour, making all kind of racket. And I came to a curve, and there was a bear right in the middle of the road, and she had two cubs with her. I couldn't stop. I didn't have enough time to stop. So I got to the edge of the road, and I gassed it, and I just fast as I could go. And she came after me. Her nose touched the hot exhaust pipe on my motorcycle, and that scared her away. I guess if she hadn't had those cubs, she wouldn't have been so aggressive. And another time in Colorado, I was in Lake City, Colorado. I was on a camping trip with a motorcycle, and I had my truck parked right at the front door of my motel room. About 2 o'clock that morning, I heard a racket. It's all kind of racket. I went to the window and turned on the light, and there was a bear in the back end of my truck going through my food, and she had found my chocolate chip cookies, and she was having a ball. So I scared her away, and I went back to bed, and about 2 hours later, she came back again, eating some more. So that was, that was an experience.
The first one sounds a whole lot scarier than the second one.
You know, the more I think about it, I say, gosh, that could have been an incident right there, you know? But anyway,
yeah,
we
sure.
got through it. So it's all fun and games.
I love the way you keep the trails up to date. That's a huge job to continually keep modifying this.
3 or 4 times a year, I have to go out and get something changed and rearranged. And then when you do that, you have to go back and change your road chart. You got to go back and change your map. You got to change your GPS track. It's a lot to it. One of the things that I don't think people think about is I have to provide gas stops every 150, every 200 miles. I have to provide motels at night if you want it. I got to provide a place for food. You have to get all that worked into this trail, and it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of planning to do all that.
Yeah, that's a lot of extra research to figure
it's
out.
It's a lot of extra research. It keeps you busy. It keeps you busy, but it does. That's been my labor of love, I guess.
By combining dirt roads, gravel roads, jeep roads, forest roads, and farm roads, Sam has created more than a mere journey. It is an epic adventure. To learn more about the TAT, visit transamtrail.com.
Stay tuned. We will continue with Sam on the Trans Am Trail later in this broadcast.
The great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Calling all outdoor enthusiasts. Springtime is here. Time to get outside.
It doesn't matter whether you ride, hike, bike, jeep, climb, or just four-wheel the forest trails with your family in a side-by-side. The Wilderness Rider, Buffalo Ranch, and Adventure Park has it all.
Don't spend your next vacation staying in a tightly clustered tent neighborhood where campsites are in a neat little row barely 20 feet apart.
If you've had enough of being surrounded by strangers at campgrounds that are overcrowded, overwhelmed, and overregulated with countless rules and stipulations, come to the Wilderness Rider Ranch and experience the many natural wonders and enchanting solitude of a pristine Ozark hardwood forest.
Camp beside serene waterfalls and listen to nature's features instead of babies that bawl and other offensive human creatures. Make your plans now to visit the Wilderness Rider Ranch, where you can spend hassle-free days in the forest, blissfully riding or hiking the many miles of scenic cliff ledges and boulder-laced stream beds.
To plan your next vacation, go to wildernessrider.com or call 530-377-6678. That's 530-377-6678.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
We are screaming through the valley where the Nishnabotna flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale. That's CJ5 with a four-wheel drive, Smokey on my tail.
Two wheels or four, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
We are back visiting today with our roving adventure reporter, Joe Martin.
When we last talked to Joe, he was headed south on a pretty quick route so he could chase the Dakar Rally. So, Joe, start us off on your journey.
I started in Houston November 18th, made it to Panama City 4 days later, just in time to miss a sailboat because of an accident in Panama City. Flew back to the States while I was waiting to get my bike repaired for 3 weeks. Then I returned to Panama City on December 18th, took the bike via air freight to Bogota, Colombia, had it repaired, and I was back on the road that Thursday and headed towards Paraguay in the Dakar Rally. So when I left on the 18th to fly back to pick up my bike, upon arrival, I realized they had not repaired my bike. So I loaded the broken bike onto an airplane and put myself on another airplane. We flew to Bogota, managed to get it to a KTM dealership where they fixed it the same day. And the following day, I got back on the road. After 10 days of riding from Bogota, Colombia to Sichuan, Paraguay, I made it just in time for the festival the day before the start of the Dakar Rally.
Nice. That's a scramble for sure.
So yeah, the total riding days I had from Houston to Paraguay were 14 days, 13 countries, 14,000 kilometers, two motorcycle crashes, and a whole lot of sightings.
Well, and I would say a whole lot of dedication, because many, many travelers, especially those that are venturing out onto the international front, do this with a much longer timetable than you did, Joe. But for all of our listeners, you'll remember we visited with Steve Willis just a short while ago, who spent 15 months going a little further south than this, but still many go at a much slower rate. What is your motivation to go so fast?
Bad planning. Honestly, it was a late start, and I knew it was a late start, so it was a matter of making it in the time frame that I was going to make it in or not making it at all. My crush to get to Panama City from Houston was to make it to a sailboat on time to get me around the Darien Gap. Well, I missed that. And then once I finally got back to the bike and got it fixed in Colombia, I only had 10 days to get to Paraguay if I wanted to make it for the start of the Dakar. So I did that. So I went back, did the math. I averaged from Houston to Paraguay, I averaged 500 miles a day for 14 days. That's what it took to get there.
Now, once you were at the Dakar, you basically rode along with the race itself. You pretty much followed all the riders on your bike as well, huh?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. And this was what was kind of amazing part of the trip. Somebody did a ride report a couple of years ago in ADV Motorcycle Magazine about following the Dakar and the experience. I'll tell you, if you're on an adventure motorcycle or anything that looks like one of the competitive bikes, everybody just assumes you're part of the race and you get treated as such. It's remarkable. The crowds just hover around you. You get about a million photos taken of you. You have to kind of shoo them off. You feel like a celebrity. It's just amazing. And you get up close and personal with all the riders, the pit crew, the starting line, everything. It's just remarkable. I highly recommend if anybody can take the time and get down there for any part of the Dakar to just go experience it. It's Formula One on dirt. It's just a remarkable event.
And you pretty much are virtually in the race if you're on a bike, it sounds like.
Well, you know, if you're keeping up with them, you have to move at a pretty good clip because they're moving about 250 miles a day through some pretty rough terrain. And some of the roads to keep up with them are actually fairly similar to the race course itself. So it's an aggressive ride keeping up with them. If you're on a motorcycle, you probably don't have a chase crew. So you're on your own out there. But it's fun and it's fast.
So before the Dakar even started, you had a unique experience as you pulled into town.
So I was in a hurry to get to the start of Dakar, but I didn't really have it on my radar screen that there was an opening festival the day before. So I figured there was something going on, so I planned on getting there, you know, midday, which I did. It was a Sunday, and as I was pulling into town, all of the cars in town were heading towards the middle of the city. So I figured that's the place to go. And as I started getting closer and closer to the town, it was bumper-to-bumper traffic. All the police were waving me around the cars. It took me a while to figure it out. But then as I got closer and closer and they started moving barricades, shuffling me in, it's like, hey, they think I'm with the race. That was all right. So I milked that for all it was worth. And before you knew it, I was right in the middle of the festival with cones placed around my bike to keep it safe and guards watching it. And I felt like I was literally part of the race. It was amazing.
Well, that is part of what adventure travel is all about, becoming part of the environment you're visiting. A lot of times that's having dinner with a local family. In your case, it was quite exciting. I can only imagine all the riders. And we're not just talking about motorcycles in the Dakar. There's all sorts of vehicles that are chasing through that very muddy, very sandy, very aggressive soil.
Oh, yes. It started back in 1979. It was motorcycles. And now it's motorcycles, quads, cars, utility vehicles, and of course the monster trucks. And to go from something as small as a bike to the size of these trucks, it's pretty amazing. So there's something for everybody now, as long as you like dirt.
Did you find yourself out there mixing it up with the trophy trucks?
stay well clear of those. I'll be pushing some video up here shortly. And, you know, those things you don't want to get in the way of. Everything about those trucks is heavy duty and bulletproof.
They look pretty intimidating. They sure do.
Yeah, I mean, I got some incredible footage when on day 8 at the break in La Paz, rest day they call it. Guys in those pit crews would argue that because it was raining and they had those things pulled apart and thousands of pieces rebuilding them. And that gave me the opportunity to get some really good photos and see what they're really all about. When you peel back the skin on some of those monsters, you see what goes into them. I mean, they are some expensive vehicles.
I can only imagine the technology it takes to make an 8-ton vehicle slam through the desert like that and survive it.
I don't know how they do it. One day I will hopefully go for riding one. They seat 3, so maybe they can find a job for me inside of there doing something.
Well, you may be their 360-degree photographer and commentator.
They'll just put me on the roof.
That could be a thrilling ride. So let's review the cities that the race started, went through, and ended at. Not every single one. I know it's a long race, but give us a few highlights if you don't mind.
Well, the start, as we discussed, is Asunción, Paraguay. That's the capital of Paraguay. That is right on the border with Argentina. So when we left that morning, at the day of the race, we left Paraguay, and then we're heading westward through Argentina, then north through Bolivia for arrival on Stage 6 into La Paz, Bolivia. Of course, there's interim steps and places they stay in between. Day 8 is rest day in La Paz, and then they start that following day heading back south towards Buenos Aires on this year's race. All on each stage is a different town where everybody stops. Most of the crew sleep in tents, so you'd think all the hotels will fill up, but they actually don't. You can remarkably find rooms in these little towns. Most of them, there's not much to write home about. It's just a little dusty stop on the side of the road.
Now, they already have the schedule posted for the 2018 Dakar, and it is going to end in Lima, Peru?
I just saw it this morning. I don't know, they must have put it up here recently, but the full 2018 website is live. Don't remember the starting point. The rest stop midway is La Paz again, and the destination is Lima. So if anybody's thinking about catching some of it, it would make an interesting one-week vacation to fly down to La Paz, rent some bikes, and follow them to Lima for a week.
Well, I've been watching the glint in Donnie's eye ever since you said that before we started talking on the microphone.
Yeah, I'll have that one on the radar for sure. So it looked like there was quite a bit of mud in this year's rally. Tell us about how much of that you saw.
We got a little bit of rain. A lot of the mud was in the salt flats in Bolivia, which is a pretty amazing place. If you look at it on a map, it's just a big white spot right in the middle of Bolivia. Other than a few days in that, it was mostly dry and hot. It's funny, on this trip, I went from sea level to about 14,000 feet and from about 100 degrees down to about 40 degrees, all within a span of about 10 days in South America.
So were you up in the Andes at that point when you're getting down to 40 degrees and up at that elevation?
Crossing over from the Atacama Desert, I always, on the west coast of South America, heading due east towards Argentina, you cross over the mountains and it gets pretty high and pretty cold.
Yeah, I've talked to many adventurers that say that that extreme elevation and temperature change is shocking when you do it within a few hours frequently.
Yeah, a few minutes. Yeah. How fast can you put on or take off clothes? Yeah.
Overwhelming number of sights, sounds, people. I can only imagine. Every person that you met and everything that you saw, do you have a favorite? What's sticking in your memories and giving you good dreams at night?
I think the high point was just a random spot I pulled over in Bolivia during the race. It was a stretch where the bikes and everybody was moved to the pavement off of dirt for a short piece. Since I was on a motorcycle, I got to get through and ride on the same road. So I got to ride on that same track. The bikes were on, and I'm going faster than them. So I passed them. I'm on a bigger, much bigger bike. Of course, the Bolivians are on both sides of the road, waving everybody on. My favorite spot was when I pulled over, just got in the middle of a bunch of Bolivian kids and just took a great photo surrounded by a bunch of them. It just made me feel like I was there. You can see that photo up on Facebook right now.
Well, the children are always so curious, and they're genuinely happy for almost anyone in any walk of life, no matter what they're doing. I bet it was quite encouraging.
Oh, it was. It was a blast. And boy, they get really excited when the motorcycles and the big trucks drive by.
So you rode hard, you rode fast, but there was a little hitch in the trail for you.
Well, I had a couple of them. I explained last time I was talking to you guys, I had a little 5-mile-an-hour collision in Panama City that took me out for 3 weeks waiting for fork seals. And then the next one was a little pilot error slide onto the sidewalk in Peru that, what did that do? Just banged me up, banged up the bike a little bit, but we kept going. Kind of knocked on wood on that one because that one could have taken me out as well, but fortunately it was just a fender bender.
So a slide on the sidewalk, I'm guessing. We have a few listeners that caught that it wasn't a slide on the road.
Okay, this is complicated. So a 2-lane road, sidewalk to the right of the road, this really interesting little ridge that went between the sidewalk and the road that went about the size of a half of a baseball lengthwise. And I thought, well, I can just hop right over that. Well, at one time it was painted, and since painted, all the paint wore off and it was just shiny metal. And I still thought, well, I can just go over that, and I knew better. And as soon as my front wheel hit it, it slipped right down, and over I go, and fortunately, there's 3 or 4 people around. They helped me pull the bike up. Ego was a little bruised, as well as my leg and my turn signal, but we kept on going.
We'll always call that a good accident when you're on two wheels and it's just your ego that's bruised.
It's like any landing you walk away from.
So chasing the Dakar, what an exciting concept, and you chased it quite a long ways. Now, at one point, you had some technical complications and some muddy road and some things that kept you from following it all the way through. So I'm guessing it might still be on your list to do this again.
I'm not done. First of all, I have to fly back here in the next week or two to La Paz to pick my bike back up from the KTM dealer and continue on with my trip. Obviously, the Dakar this year is over, but I've got a little South America traveling still to do, and I still have to get my bike back on. So game plan is to go back next year, or if not every year, fairly routinely. It's an amazing event. But you did remind me of a little mishap I did have, and one of the reasons I didn't finish the ride. I was by myself, so as I was following the Dakar along, everything was going fairly well, until I was fortunate enough to be asked by French Sport TV to do an interview for their French TV. So the next morning we did that, and it cost me about a half a day. So I was getting a late start catching up with them. And as it turns out, there was about a 200-mile dirt road that everybody had to take to heading south into Argentina, which would have been fine, 200 miles by myself, dirt, piece of cake, except it started raining, as slippery as can be. And my spot tracker quit working, so my SOS, GPS, fail-safe, call in the helicopters, take me back home option was out.
So, well, and all the chase vehicles had already gone ahead of you.
And all the chase, I was the last one. There was nobody behind me, everybody's in front of me. So if I broke down, broke a leg on that 200-mile road, then I'd be out there by myself with no way to call home. So I packed it in, turned around, went back to La Paz, flew home, got some work done, and I'll pick up where I left off here in a week or two.
It's one of those things where it's really hard to say no to an adventure and take the safe route and save the adventure and the travel for the next day.
Well, I figured it was a 50-50 chance I would have made it okay, but 50-50 wasn't enough. I want to keep doing this for many more years.
Well, you always have to ride so you can ride again tomorrow.
Rule of the road.
So when you fly back down to pick up your bike, I know you're not hightailing it straight back to Texas. Where are you going to go first?
Well, the original plan was to finish hitting the rest of the South American states. Unfortunately, I'm late starting getting back down, so the weather's changing. By the time I would get back down to the bottom of Argentina, it'd start getting pretty cold. So I'm going to abort this year. I'm going to work my way back north to Cartagena, but unlike my trip down, I'm going to take a little bit more time to enjoy the scenery a little bit more, and maybe I'll only do 250 miles a day instead of 500 a day.
So is Machu Picchu on your list?
Machu Picchu, going to hit the mountains of the Andes a little more rather than the highways. I've got a whole lot of pins on the map that I blew by on the way down I didn't get to see. So a lot of land sightseeing, a lot of friends to visit I didn't get to see.
Well, that is another one of the really great things about adventure travel is leaving one or two pins that you don't see, so there's always an excuse to go back.
That there is. So I've got a lot to cover, and then, you know, I guess the good news is I didn't finish the trip, so there's all the reason to go finish it next year.
Well, we are going to bother you, of course, for more reports, and we'll be posting photos as you make them available. Let all of our listeners see the amazing sights. And keep in mind that Joe's photos are frequently 360-degree photos, so you can actually look up around and really feel like you're on scene.
That's right. And unfortunately, I didn't get to shoot as much as I wanted to on the way down, but on the way back, I'll have a whole lot more time to do a whole lot more, and I'll have more time to organize that and post it. So look out for better videos.
Well, we will be waiting anxiously. And thanks for joining us today. We absolutely love following your travels vicariously.
Well, thanks for your patience with my crazy trips.
The great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
Calling all outdoor enthusiasts. Springtime is here. Time to get outside.
It doesn't matter whether you ride, hike, bike, jeep, climb, or just four-wheel the forest trails with your family in a side-by-side. The Wilderness Rider, Buffalo Ranch, and Adventure Park has it all.
Don't spend your next vacation staying in a tightly clustered tent neighborhood where campsites are in a neat little row barely 20 feet apart.
If you've had enough of being surrounded by strangers at campgrounds that are overcrowded, overwhelmed, and overregulated with countless rules and stipulations, come to the Wilderness Rider Ranch and experience the many natural wonders and enchanting solitude of a pristine Ozark hardwood forest.
Camp beside serene waterfalls and listen to nature's features instead of babies that bawl and other offensive human creatures. Make your plans now to visit the Wilderness Rider Ranch, where you can spend hassle-free days in the forest, blissfully riding or hiking the many miles of scenic cliff ledges and boulder-laced stream beds.
To plan your next vacation, go to wildernessrider.com or call 530-377-6678. That's 530-377-6678.
We are screaming through the valley where the nation of Botany flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale. That's CJ5 with a four-wheel drive, Smokey on my tail.
Two wheels or four, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Hi, and welcome back to Outdoors with Wheels. I'm Donnie Stewart.
And I'm Lynn Beckwith.
Earlier in this episode, we begin our visit with Sam Carrero, founder and creator of the original Tat, not to be confused with lesser knockoffs.
Here's Sam.
I guess the downside of the whole thing is people get on the internet and they see something and they think it's free. They say, you got GPS tracks. Won't you just send these to me? I don't want to pay you $12. You know, they just don't understand what it takes to do all this. And then there's some guys out on the internet that have pirated some of my work. I have protected my Transamerica Trail into an LLC. These guys don't have permission to use my name. They don't have permission to use the Transamerica Trail LLC. They'll take some of my tracks and change them and reroute them. And there's a couple of guys that I changed them, and they've gone through private land and public land and gone through gated communities. And I catch a lot of flack for that. The Forestry Commission in North Carolina gave me a phone call one day, and they said, your trail goes right through a part of the forest that closed off to riders, and we have closed gates, and your riders keep going through there. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't understand. All of my stuff is public. And he gave me the name of the place. And then I finally told him, I said, that is not the official TAT. That is some people that have pirated my stuff and taken it upon themselves to do that. And I told him, I said, you know, you need to contact him. I don't know his name. I don't know his phone number. He doesn't post that on the internet. He won't answer my emails. He won't answer my phone calls. I've written him, my attorney has written him letters. He won't answer that. I'm not responsible for that. So a couple of days later, he calls me back and he said, we located this guy, and I offer my apologies that it's not your trail. The authorities at the town that he lives in have contacted him to change it and take it down. I don't know if he's done that or not. So that's the downside of it. You know, people want something for nothing, you know, and it's not, there's nothing free in this world. You just can't have it. Nothing's free. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I had heard a little bit about some of the counterfeit trails, and I would encourage anybody who's seriously wanting to take this journey to go with good information. Your prices are very, very reasonable.
They're very reasonable. You know, $12 for a GPS track. It takes me 4 days to ride and fix and motel rooms. Well, you know, all I can do is, like you said, if you want to ride the official and the original Transamerica Trail, the way that Sam Carrero has designed it and organized it for your safety and comfort, you need to use my trail. You need to use www.transamtrail.com. That's the only way you're going to get the correct information.
And updated information, ongoing,
and updated
continually.
Information. That's right. Yeah. This guy, these guys, I'm sure it's more than one guy. They'll put these tracks out for sale, and they forget about them. They don't even give you a contact number to call them for any problems, anything is. And I try to provide some customer service with my people and try to give them the safety and comfort and to enjoy it. And, you know, I'm just catching a lot of flack for that. It's not fair, you know?
Well, that's very unfortunate, because you certainly don't deserve any flack for it.
I know it. But overall, it's still good. I still love it. I'm still doing it. In fact, I'm leaving 2 days from today, going out to Utah and Colorado on a 10-day mission to work on trails and build some loops. One of the new things that I'm doing now is I'm building loops off of the Transamerica Trail that people can drive their vehicle out there and park it in a safe place and ride 1, 2, 3, 4 days in a big loop and come back to the original spot without backtracking. That eliminates a lot of this, you know, a lot of these things that they have to backtrack. That's getting to be popular too. So I'm doing that now. So I'm going out now and I'm going to spend 10 days in Utah and Colorado developing loops like that. So that should be good.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing what you come up with.
Yeah, well, that's going to be fun. Are you still riding? What kind of bike do you have?
I have several bikes. I have a Yamaha WR450, which is one of my dual sport bikes. I also have a Husky Terra.
Well, that's good. You've got some good motorcycles, yeah.
Yes, sir. But, I enjoy them a lot.
Well, good. Maybe if you're over this way or something, you can. I live right on the Tet. I live in Corinth, Mississippi, which is right on the Tet, and I have people stopping in, oh gosh, several times a week. Just call me when you get to town and we have lunch or something. Or they spend the night all for camping in my yard. I have a lot of people camping. You know, they come in and then they need to do some laundry, and we can do some laundry for them, and they can camp. They take a shower and stuff like that. So, and there's numerous places on the Tet, which I've mentioned before, that these people allow the riders to come in and stop and say, hey, I'll give you free ice water. I can give you free camping in my yard. You can use my shop for repairs. I got a welder, whatever you need. And they don't charge them for it, you know. Hope that continues. Hope the riders don't abuse that privilege, because they do, then that's going to be closed down to the public, you know.
Well, that's a wonderful network of good-hearted individuals.
It is. It's a good-hearted people. It really is.
Well, Sam, I'm not surprised by your hospitality, because about a year ago when I first started considering riding the TAT, I had emailed you with a question about miles between gas stops. You not only responded very, very quickly to my email, but you also gave me your cell phone number. So it's amazing support that you give. Yeah,
that's right.
I'm very impressed.
Whenever I send something out to somebody, I give them my cell phone number and I said, I'm here for you. I believe in customer support, customer satisfaction. I'm here 24/7. In fact, I had a phone call this morning just about 3 hours ago. A guy lives in New York. He was in Andrews, North Carolina, getting ready to start the trail. He called me. He was just about in tears. He said, Sam, I just bought the Zumo 665, the one that you suggested for me to buy. He said, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So I spent about 45 minutes on the phone with him, getting him, telling him instructions how to download those tracks into his Zumo, how to convert those tracks into routes, and how to use his Zumo. And he starts the trail in the morning. I said, call me in the morning when you get on the trail if you have any problems, and I'll help you through it. And that was just this morning. I do that several times a week. So
now bless your heart for that.
Yeah. And I have actually been out on the trail just doing some joyriding. And I met a couple of guys from Texas and in your home state. No, they're from North Carolina. And they were using these pirated GPS tracks. I stopped them. You can tell a TAT rider, by the way, his motorcycle is packed. I said, these guys are on the TAT. So I flagged them down, and I didn't tell them who I was. I said, are you guys on the TAT? And they said, yeah. And they said, we're having a hell of a time. We can't figure out this GPS. They're just crazy, and we've been through a couple of dead ends. I said, and the first question I asked him, I said, where did you get your tracks? And they told me, and it was a pirated track. I said, well, what you need to do, we're about 10 miles from my home. I said, what you need to do is follow me to my house, and we will delete all that crap that you got on your GPS, and I will give you some good tracks to use free of charge. And we did all that, and they called me a couple of days later, and they were ecstatic. He said, man, we're blowing through this thing you wouldn't believe. So there's stuff like that. You know, sometimes it makes me mad. Well, every time it makes me mad, but
You
have to get over it. There's stuff like that. But anyway, all in all, this has been a wonderful project. I've enjoyed it. It's turned out to be something of my wildest dreams. I never expected it to go global like it did. I do charge some money, but it's at a break-even point. Traveling these days is expensive. Gasoline's expensive. Motels are expensive. Meals on the road are expensive. I have to endure that all by myself. And I'm not a wealthy man by any means. So anyway, that's what it's boiling down to.
I think most people would charge a whole lot more than you do, Sam. It's a labor of love for you.
It's a labor of love, yeah. But I just hope that the people that ride it, they seem to enjoy it. That's how you get your satisfaction, when somebody calls you and say, hey, man, this is great. Oh, let me tell you this story right quick. I had a guy who lives in South Carolina. He came through, stopped in Corinth, and he called me up. He said, Sam, I've got to meet you. We got to have lunch. And we did, and we started talking, and he was in tears. He said, for the last 12 months, I've been on the couch just depressed as hell. I couldn't do anything. I stayed on the couch and watched TV all year. And one day my wife came into the room and she said, honey, I found something on the internet that you might be interested in. It's called the Transamerica Trail. So she went out and bought him a motorcycle and gave it to him. And she ordered my map. She said, I want you to get your butt off that couch and get on this trail. And he did. And he came, when he got to God, he said, this thing has changed my life. He said, It's just gotten me out of a movie depression, and I'm having so much fun, and I thank you. And he was in tears. So that's a pretty good story right there. That makes the whole thing worthwhile.
That's exactly the spirit that we've started this radio show.
Do you have non-motorcyclists contacting you and purchasing?
Yes, I do. Jeeps. You wouldn't believe the Jeep community that's beginning to ride this, and the side-by-sides that are doing this. This week alone, I've had three groups of Jeepers that come through. They're just having a blast, and people on side-by-side, men bringing their wives and their kids on side-by-sides, and it's just been fantastic. It really is.
What are some of the other loops you've already developed? I know I saw a few of them on your website.
Some of the loops that I've already developed are Mississippi and Tennessee loops. I've got a system where, depends on how much you want to ride, you can do a 2-day ride, you can do a 4-day ride, or you can do a 6-day ride, and you have a choice. And you can put all these things together, and you can start at a central point and come back to that same point. Park your vehicle in a motel parking lot or Walmart parking lot and Safe Place parking, and you come back to the same place again. And I'm going to do
without
that out west.
Without backtracking.
Without backtracking. Without, it's a loop. You go out one way and you come back another way, a whole different loop. And I'm going to do that out west. And that should be popular too when I get that finished.
Sam, I think I remember seeing something about in some areas where the TAT will split into a easier and a more difficult option.
No, that's not me. That's somebody else.
Okay. So if you're seeing those are counterfeit.
Those are counterfeit.
Okay, that's good to know.
When I laid out my trail, the thing I had in the back of my mind was to keep it safe and simple, because a lot of these people own larger motorcycles and they got a lot of camping gear and the motorcycle loaded down. I want to give them experience outback, but I don't want to make it high tech where they can't get through there. One of the updates that I've done was in Utah. I had a section in Utah called Black Dragon, which is about 7 miles. It's in the canyons in a dried up creek bed. And it's kind of technical. In fact, you can't, an average rider or a semi-good rider cannot get through there on a loaded down motorcycle, because he can, but it becomes work. So I took that out. I went around that. And there were some sections in Nevada that had gotten to be real, real bad, because the county didn't provide any county maintenance on the road, and they got washed out. And I had to go in there. The mom and pop gas stops had dried up, and there wasn't any gas stops for 200 and 300 miles, and there wasn't any motels. So what I did, I went in there 2 years ago, and I deleted the state of Nevada and went north up into Idaho and then across to Oregon. And Idaho is a very, very beautiful, wonderful dual sport ride that turned out to be fantastic. So I took out spots that were giving people trouble to make it easier. And some of these piloted tracks pride themselves into putting stuff in there that's really high tech stuff, you know, that you can't get through there on a loaded dual sport motorcycle. You need a motocross bike.
Yeah, not for your average rider either.
It's not for your average cross country rider who wants to do that. And when you do cross country, you got to carry gear, you got to carry luggage and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Carrying all that gear changes the whole handling dynamics of a bike.
It changes the whole thing, especially when you get a little section of soft sand that you got to go through. And I took out some passes of Colorado, Hancock Pass and Tomichi Pass. Had gotten to be so bad, so rocky, and people were having trouble through there. So I found a bypass around that, which was beautiful. The scenery is still there, except you're on a nice Jeep road now that you don't have to fight the terrain anymore. And to me, it's much more enjoyable. You know, if you want high-tech, super hard stuff, you don't need to ride TAT, okay?
It's actually very reassuring, because I think it's about the journey.
It's about the journey and the experience and the enjoyment of just getting there. That's what it's about.
I've heard of people doing this in, you know, really Speedy Gonzales style and having it the whole TAT done in a couple of weeks. And I've heard of people taking extremely long times as well. What would you recommend if somebody really wanted to enjoy not being too big of a rush? What do you think is the ideal time frame?
Well, it's a little over 5,000 miles, about 5,200, 5,300 miles. On an average day, if you leave in the morning, you know, at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and you ride a full day, and it's probably going to take you about 29 days, 30 days to do it. And that's riding every day. Well, that's pretty physical. That takes its toll. I would say at least allow 30 days to do it. You know, and there's going to be places on there that you're going to want to stop and take photos, and you want to talk to people, and you're going to want to spend some time, especially when all these scenic places. Each state is different. There's great scenic places in every state. Each state is different. And I've had guys, they say, I want to be the fastest rider. I said, well, go to it. I want to do it in 24 days. I want to do it in 25 days. Well, if that's your thing, just do it, you know. But that's not how it was. It wasn't designed for that, and it wasn't designed to be a race. And I guess people want to say, I did the TAT in 20 days. I'm the fastest rider. Well, more power to you, okay?
Right.
Go ahead. I haven't done it in one continuous ride because I haven't had 28 days to do it. But now I'm retired, and I think next year my son and I are going to do it. We'll try to do it together.
We'll look forward to hearing the stories on that.
If you can't take a month off at a time, you could go and ride a week or two, find a little town that has a decent storage facility, and keep the bike somewhere, fly home, go back to work, and 6 months later, go back and pick up your bike and go on.
There's been a ton of people who have done that. That's usually do it in 3 or 4 sessions. And there's places out there that will let you store their bikes, and and I give people the names of those places. They ride two, three, ride a week, 10 days, and park their bikes and come back the next year and start at that same spot and ride again. People have done that.
There's a little maintenance involved along the way if you're riding 5,200 miles of dirt.
That's right. You have to prepare for changing oil in your motorcycle, changing your air filter. You got to think about your tires wearing down, think about the wear and tear of your chain, stuff like that.
Tighten the spokes now and again. I'm sure there's quite a bit.
And there are people out there that provide this service for the riders. And, you know, they say, hey, stop in here and you can tell me when you're going to be here. And we'll order some tires and have them ready for you when you get here. And we'll have some oil ready for you. And they'll get all that prepaid and that stuff is waiting for them when they get there, you know, stuff like that. So
it's that's invaluable to keep you,
it
keep
is.
You moving along.
It is. That's good
along.
Information. The thing about it is you just can't wake up one morning and say, hey, I'm going to jump on the TAT next week and ride it. You've got to plan and you got to get preparation and you got to know what you're doing and you got to identify your gas stops, your overnights, your motel and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of preparation to it.
You made a lot of that preparation so much easier with all of your planning.
When the people buy their maps, all this information is printed right there on the maps with the people's names and the people's phone numbers. They can, you know, they can get all that done in advance. The halfway point is currently Moab, Utah. There's a couple of places in Moab, Utah. Arrowhead Motorsports, to mention one. You can call this guy and he'll have the tires ready for you. Just tell him about when you're going to be there. He'll change out the tires for you, change your oil, stuff like that. There's a place in Utah, there's a ranch out there called Three Step Ranch. It's a 40-acre ranch right on the border of Utah and Colorado. He has a full shop. He provides camping. He has a shop. He has overnight camping, and he can give you a clean. He has outdoor showers and outdoor hot tub and clean showers and clean bathrooms. He welcomes you to do that, make reservations with him. And he will cook you a meal if you want to. You know, he's a wonderful cook, and it's a good place to stay. It's just numerous places. And all these places are marked on the map with the person's name and the phone number. So the maps are invaluable if you want to do that.
I think the one other thing we want to remind any riders who have done the TAT previously is to don't think that you have the tracks just because you did it once upon a time. These are updated,
they're changed,
modernized, new locations, new helpers. You need to get modern tracks if you're going to ride the TAT again.
Modern tracks. To my way of thinking, when I change something, it's for the better. I try to make it better, to make it just more enjoyable and more rider-friendly, more scenic.
Well, Sam, I'm pretty sure you have more than accomplished those goals with the TAT. It is an extremely scenic adventure, and we thank you for creating it and joining us on Outdoors with Wheels. We sure look forward to seeing you out on the TAT one day.
And for today's multi-use trail update, the Sam Houston Forest Trails remain closed at present due to the damage they received during our big floods this spring. The ranger has completed his assessment of the damages, and we have begun to schedule work days to fix them. If you would like to volunteer, and we need lots of volunteers, please go to either Trail Riders of Houston or Old Dudes on Dirt Bikes. You will need to become a member of one of those groups in order to be considered a member of the Sam Houston Trails Coalition, as that is merely a group of groups who answer to the Forest Service to keep the trails up and going. Please consider volunteering. We could sure use your help. There are numerous work days to be scheduled in the near future. Visit one of the online addresses we spoke of and volunteer. And as always, visit the TrailsCoalitionOfTexas.com for the latest information. Today's tech tip, we'll be talking about funnels, something we all need and use regularly. How many times have you gone to get your funnel that was nice and clean last time you put oil in your machine, only to find it's got grit and crud all over it? So you clean it all up, you get it nice and spotless again, you put the oil in, then you have a funnel that's all oily and dripping. We have a cure for that. There's a new funnel being made. It's available through Chaparral. It's by Malcolm Smith Racing, MSR. It's called the Clean Funnel, and it simply has a cap on the top and a cap on the bottom, so it stays nice and clean between usages and does not get your tool bag dirty when you put it up after using. I think it's a pretty cool thing to have. In addition to that, we stumbled onto a very small, I'm talking easily pocket size, collapsible silicone funnel available on eBay that comes from China for merely a buck, and this thing looks mighty handy to have in your gear bag on your fender or something. So I would suggest picking up both of these. They are extremely useful. And for all you adventurers who may find you need to add a little oil out on the trail, this little collapsible funnel is just the ticket.
Check out the Outdoors with Wheels Facebook page, and you can look at photos of these two groovy new funnels. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Outdoors with Wheels. I'm Lynn Beckwith.
And I'm Donnie Stewart.
And we sure look forward to talking again next Sunday.
Get out there and recreate.
Outdoors with Wheels has Lynn and Donnie bring you another informative and entertaining show. Thank you for listening. Now, head into the great outdoors. Get those tires dirty and get your mind right. Oh, wow.